We would like to acknowledge that the land which we are gathered on today is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe Nation, specifically the Chippewa Tri-Council, comprised of the Chippewas of Beausoleil, Rama, and Georgina Island First Nations, and more recently, the Mississaugas of the Credit River First Nation. Ontario is covered by 46 treaties and other agreements and is home to many Indigenous nations from across Turtle Island, including the Inuit and the Métis. These treaties and other agreements, including the One Dish with One Spoon Wampum Belt Covenant, are agreements to peaceably share and care for the land and its resources. Other Indigenous nations, Europeans, and newcomers were invited into this covenant in the spirit of respect, peace, and friendship. Most of us have come here as settlers, immigrants, or newcomers in this generation or generations past. We are all treaty people. Every day, we are mindful of broken covenants and we strive to make this right. We commit to collaborating based on the foundational assumption that Indigenous peoples have their power, strength, and competency to develop culturally specific strategies for their communities. We are dedicated to honoring Indigenous self-determination, history, and culture, and are committed to moving forward in the spirit of reconciliation and respect with all First Nation, Métis, and Inuit people. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Beyond the Stethoscope, a podcast focused on hospice palliative care. My name is Linda Meeks. I am the host for today. I am one of the education facilitators at the North Simcoe Muskoka Hospice Palliative Care Network. My guest today is Julie Layton Phelps, and Julie will be discussing with us MADE Nursing Perspectives. Hello, Julie. Welcome.
Hi, Linda. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. This is a very interesting topic, and happy to see that you have so much information that you're going to share with us today.
Yes, it is a very interesting topic and one that definitely needs to be talked about.
Could you please tell us the article that you chose today to discuss and why you have chosen this topic?
Certainly. So I reviewed an article from the Journal of Hospice and Palliative Care Nursing, which is an American journal, and it was entitled Nurses, Values, and Perspectives on Medical Aid in Dying. The publisher of the journal is Wolters Kluwer, and this article was obtained from volume 24, number one, and was written in February of 2022. I also reviewed for comparison four additional articles, with three of them being of Canadian context. So the original article is American, but really I didn't see much of a difference in the nursing perspective between all of the articles. The main difference is the MADE procedure, approval process, and the fact that numerous states still have not legalized MADE, unlike Canada, who has approved this procedure countrywide. I also reviewed and summarized the College of Nurses of Ontario, the Registered Nurses Association of Ontario, and the Canadian Nurses Association standards on nurses and MADE, mostly in Ontario. Most of the MADE-related research, especially involving healthcare professionals' feelings, is primarily doctor-based. Little research has been done with nurses who all play a large role in supporting MADE. A poll done in 2014 in Canada demonstrated that while 79% of the general public favored having MADE as an option for end-of-life care, healthcare professionals were much less supportive. In fact, only 45% of medical doctors agreed with legalizing MADE. I remember early in my nursing career and working with palliative patients, there was information and some education with end-of-life care, but not much on the palliative journey. Nursing school in the 90s, I'm aging myself here, did not really prepare the student and graduate nurses to work with the dying patients, especially being able to deliver quality palliative care. As time went on in my career, I did learn on the job, but frankly, I still felt ill-prepared to deal with death professionally. It was not until about 10 years ago I started taking some more palliative care courses through our regional palliative care network, actually the one I work for now. And I found this education extremely valuable in pursuing a nursing specialty in hospice palliative care. As I became more involved with palliative care, and then we heard about the upcoming amendment to the criminal code that would allow assisted death, I thought it was important for myself to be informed about this option. When the law actually came into effect in 2017, I became more intrigued with this end-of-life option, as so did some of the patients I was caring for. To be able to provide the most up-to-date information to my clients who inquired about MAID, I did do a lot of research into the application process and the procedure itself. Nothing in 2017 really described what MAID providers, so medical doctors or in Canada, nurse practitioners, and nurses in general felt about this new option. This, especially in light that a year earlier, assisted suicide was a criminally punishable offense. Took a bit to wrap my head around this significant change. As more and more people were seeking MAID, I pondered how this would ultimately affect nurses over the long run. I thought this topic of nurses' feelings about MAID needed to be explored and brought to light of the whole MAID process. This is nothing like any other nursing intervention that we as nurses assist with or witness.
Oh, yes, Julian, thank you for that interest, because we've worked together for quite some time, and I do know that we do rely on you for up-to-date and current information on this topic. So could you please provide a brief background on the legalization of MAID in Canada for those who may not be as familiar?
For sure. So back in February 2015, the Supreme Court of Canada ruled in Carter versus Canada, in which parts of the criminal code would need to be changed to comply with the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. If you'd like more information on Carter versus Canada, feel free to Google this historic case. In June 2016, the Parliament of Canada passed federal legislation that allows eligible terminally ill Canadian adults to request MAID. Then in October of 2020, the Ministry of Justice and the Attorney General of Canada introduced Bill C-7, an act to amend the criminal code for MAID in Parliament. This is where MAID had become legalized across Canada, with each province and territory responsible for their own policies where MAID can take place, but they cannot permit actions that are prohibited under the criminal code. To qualify for MAID, the person requesting this must be over the age of 18, must have provincial health coverage, to voluntarily request MAID, to be competent to make their own decisions, even at the time of the procedure, and must have a grievous and irremediable terminal medical condition. Psychiatric disorders alone do not qualify for MAID at this time. There must be two assessments done by a medical doctor, or if in Canada, a nurse practitioner as well, that are independent of each other to qualify. So they can't be two doctors from the same medical practice, for example. The consent and request form must be witnessed and signed by two persons who would not benefit from the person's death or their will. Once the second assessment is completed, there is a 10-day reflection period. On the day of the procedure, final consent must be obtained. The person may cancel the procedure at any point in time up to the first injection. So even after they've had their IV started, they can still cancel. They can change their mind and do not do the procedure at all, and quality palliative care would then resume. Some may decide to change the date. If there's a risk of the person dying before their 10-day reflection period was completed, the physician could apply for an exemption to do the procedure sooner. There are two methods of providing the medications used in a MAID death. First, and the most common method of administration, is the IV route. The medications used include midazolam or Versed to induce a deep sleep. Then lidocaine is injected to numb the vein. Next, it is propofol, which is an anesthetic, to induce a deep coma. Then rocuronium is injected to paralyze the muscles of the body. So remember, these common sedatives and anesthetics are in lethal doses. The other method of administration is self-administration of a prescribed med that the patient takes on their own accord. This method is rarely used in Canada, as death is not always certain if the dose is not correct. This is quite the opposite in the States, where the primary delivery method is oral ingestion. Then, next, on March 17, 2021, Parliament revised the legislation, making important changes to who may be eligible to obtain MAID and the process of assessment. Some of the important changes include only needing one person to witness the clinician A form, which is that written request for MAID, and this can now be done by a healthcare provider who is in a paying position. Now there are two streams with the new legislation, those whose death is reasonably foreseeable and those whose death is not. Both streams require the person to apply for MAID as before and must have the two assessments done by MAID assessors. If the person's death is reasonably foreseeable, the 10-day reflection period has been removed. If their death is not reasonably foreseeable, then there are additional safeguards in place that must be followed. This includes a 90-day reflection period. One of the assessors must have expertise in the condition for which they are suffering from, and the patient must be informed of all available and reasonable treatment options to relieve suffering, including palliative care, counseling, and then final consent prior to the procedure is required. So this stream, they are unable to have advanced consent. So the other new piece of legislation is advanced consent. And that's only available to whose death is reasonably foreseeable. And it allows the practitioner to be able to perform MAID if the patient's cognition declines before the procedure is performed. When the patient requests the advance consent, they must be of sound mind at that time. And of note, Canada is the only country to allow nurse practitioners to be assessors and to administer medications in MAID.
Could you please describe briefly what the nurse's role would be if a patient has requested MAID up to and including the day of death?
Yes. So the nurse's role is quite varied. A lot of it is still our basic care with a few additions. So we must respond to a request for information. So this is either the nurse is comfortable and competent in telling the person about the procedure, about how to apply. You could also give them the Ontario government website addresses that explain all this in great detail as well. I often do both. Exploring the deeper conversations about this request with the patient and family. So sometimes people think their only way to relieve their suffering is to die. And I remember there was a case of someone who requested MAID, but didn't actually want to die. They thought this was their only way to relieve their pain. And in fact, he was not receiving adequate pain control. So once they were able to get his pain managed, he didn't want MAID anymore. So there's still a lot of misconceptions and myths about MAID as well. Nurses are to provide nursing care up to the time of procedure or for the entire journey, whichever they feel most comfortable doing. Starting the IVs, which there's two, one is a backup in case one blows, or if they have a CVAD or a PICC line, then we still start one for referral IV just as a backup. Being able to work as part of the team, debriefing with family and the doctor after the procedure, providing after-death care, so removing the IVs, pain pumps and other tubes if they already have them in place, because the funeral home is going to come right after. So it would be if looking after them in hospice or in the hospital, we remove the lines. Must have great communication skills and technical skills like IV insertion and maintenance, assisting the doctor as they need, completing documentation like the EDITH and any home care and hospital charting that is required. Gathering up all the supplies and having them ready for pickup so the family doesn't have to worry about all that. And being comfortable with intense motion, whether it's positive or negative, from the family, from the patient, and being aware of your own self.
That was a great review. And can you please summarize the article that you have chosen for today's discussion?
Sure. So the article previously mentioned is American, but it is a very recently published one. Actually, it's the most current one I could locate. This article describes MAID as the highly regulated process of allowing a physician to prescribe a terminally ill, cognitively competent patient a lethal dose of medication intended to end their own life. Where it is legal, MAID is not considered euthanasia or suicide. Those with the American Nurses Association state, because of the social contract of trust between nurses and the public, nurses will not participate in actively taking a human life. Before the MAID term was used in the United States, they called it death with dignity. At the time, nurses felt ill-prepared to discuss with patients due to lack of knowledge given to them, and also feared losing their job due to these discussions. In 2017, the term medical assistance in dying was adopted, both in Canada and the US. And at this time, nurses felt not only professional, but personal pressure regarding MAID as the legislation increased across the US. Also in 2017, the Hospice and Palliative Nurses Association released their position statement and stated, declaring MAID is not within the scope of palliative care, but did endorse the nurse's role in providing information to patients when requested after assessing that all other palliative care needs were met. This creates difficulties in role descriptions amongst professionals and lawmakers. In 2019, the American Nurses Association then released an updated position statement with clearer language and clarification on the nurse's participation. The nurse is allowed to provide education and give physical and emotional comfort. The article does admit there is little knowledge about nurses' feelings on MAID in the US, even to date. There is also little to no information on whether nurses in the US would support the expansion of legislation like Canada has done in the past few years. This article reviews the survey completed by the American Nurses Association members in 2020, but the article wasn't written until 2022. The survey resulted in responses from 2,043 nurses, most of them being women at 91.5%, with a mean age of 52 years. Also, statistically important were that only 25% of respondents lived in a state where MAID was legal. Roughly 50% of those surveyed were familiar with the concept of MAID. Other results include 49% of nurses personally supported MAID, 57% supported MAID in the context of their professional role, 49% felt MAID should be allowed by advance directive. Most of the nurses did not have experience with care of a person having MAID. The last stats were that 86% of those nurses who would care for a patient who were contemplating MAID and 66% during the actual procedure. A category of questions included support of MAID and willingness of care by type of religion. One result was that Christian nurses indicated significantly lower rates of backing of a MAID personally and professionally. Non-Christian nurses had higher rates of caring for a patient having MAID. In general, nurses stated religion was their reason for objecting to MAID, and that was roughly 42%. Those nurses who identified as spiritual were more likely to support. Other indicators in the differences in support were also inquired during their research. Some of these include the number of years of nursing experience, knowledge of the MAID practice, living status in the legal MAID states, routine exposure to death and religion. They discovered the nurses who had more knowledge about this intervention predicted personally supported MAID. However, those with higher years of nursing practice did not. Nurses' exposures to death did not predict their personal support of MAID. Statistically insignificant results showed no difference between personal and professional support of MAID.
And like any ethical topic, there are always two sides of a debate. What can you tell us about this particular topic?
Yes, for sure. This is one of the top ethical topics that nursing has encountered in a very long time. This is one of the most morally and ethically intense subjects to involve the nursing, and I would also say the medical profession, in a very long time. Medical doctors take an oath to do no harm. And I feel nursing follows suit, even though we don't actually take an oath. In thinking about MAID and the do no harm statement, I can see it from two sides. Firstly, the do no harm oath, or something similar, means the healthcare professional will not intentionally harm a patient in any way. So taking one's life is doing harm in the eyes of the medical and nursing professions, and prior to MAID, the justice system as well. However, in my perspective, allowing someone to suffer, even if medicated and is having great palliative care, is doing harm. It's kind of a catch-22 situation. Some other ethical concerns that have risen since it has been passed into Canadian law especially include leaving out particular populations like the cognitively impaired. So this would be when the family would request MAID, or the patients, even if they're confused, just say they want to die, they don't want to live anymore, or stated that before losing their ability, that they would want to die if they had become incapacitated. Mature minors is another population not able to access MAID. Currently, the age is 18 years, but there is argument with mature teenagers. It has been passed by the Supreme Court that mature minors can refuse life-sustaining medical treatment without their parents' consent. Mental health sufferers also have been excluded from accessing MAID. However, this is going to set to change soon in Canada. To me, this will add a whole other side of ethical concerns regarding safeguards. With the new legislation currently where the death does not have to be reasonably foreseen, this has stirred some mixed emotions. There have been a couple of news stories recently about a couple of people who have accessed MAID or is in the process of accessing MAID for reasons one might question. I believe both of these are in Ontario. One lady who is trying to access MAID due to her multiple chemical allergies, and the place she resides at is causing her to be quite ill for a very long time. Unfortunately, she cannot afford to live anywhere else. So she is requesting MAID. There are many more ethical and moral issues associated with MAID, actually enough to probably do another presentation. In addition, many people think within the palliative care realm that death should never be hastened, while others express the feeling that if we can put our pets to death, why can't we do that to humans?
What are some of the common themes identified in the articles that you researched?
So palliative care in any setting with any age can be at best emotionally challenging. In reading several articles, I was not really surprised with the feelings and concerns the nurses who were interviewed had. In being a nurse with 27 years of varied experience in several different settings and witnessing too many deaths to count, I would with some certainty agree with what was discovered. There was great variability in the descriptions among nurses, MAID assessors, and providers. Some were related to being in certain religious groups, and others were dependent on geographical location. The most common theme was about significant moral work and unique challenges. So, despite the vast legal and regulatory protocols in place from the government and the institutions who support MAID procedures, there is still great hesitations. So below I've listed some common themes, and most of these are quotes, just to let you know. So the adopters are ones who agree with MAID and would support MAID in any way they felt they could. So some of the expressions included obligations to the patient and oneself in doing the right thing. Positively reinforced the nurse's views on the profession as providing holistic care without judgment and advocating patient's choice and supporting a good death as defined by the patient. Why does holistic care not include a controlled death? If it is a person's decision and it is best for them, then I think I should support them because it's not about me. MAID is an opportunity to do things differently. Historic and pioneering spirit related to the receptivity to this new change in practice. One also said, I help blaze the trail. Duty to provide care. Positively impacted and expressed relief and now having more option for patients. Another one said, I'm glad to be involved because I think it's important, really important. Witnessing a May death was affirming and feeling happy and pleased for the patient who is grateful and really, really ready, which in contrast to watching a painful and poor death. Profound and amazing. This is how I'd like to die. Celebratory nature to dying that they had never witnessed a MAID before. Honored to have helped the person and the patient and family who were so thankful. Emotional, feeling choked up, shedding a tear, but still in a positive light. The patient's readiness and clarity added an uplifted quality to the experience, unanticipated humor, and heart-opening moments. Some of the expressions made by objectors, so these are the nurses and doctors who did not want to participate, who thought it was morally wrong. Misconceptions, uncertainties, uncharted territory. Struggle to make sense of the major practice change. Crime against the law and God. Sacredness of human life. Implications and reasons behind the request for MAID. Challenges, including personal and professional. Practice supports available to guide the nurse's practice or their lack of. Employer obligations and support or their lack of. The moral responses, the good and the bad, situation dependent. Sadness and grief. One nurse said, for me, euthanizing a patient is not a part of nursing. It's the opposite of everything that I've been doing or wanting to do. Due to lack of or limited support, some nurses limited their involvement in MAID or have completely avoided it. For example, some nurses may do the MAID supply check the day before the procedure, but they wouldn't actually be there present for the death. One said, we are not God, so we should not be doing God-like things. Legally and morally at risk. No support to those who object, either by employer, other staff, and government. One nurse, who was an evangelical Christian, stated, believe in life on all levels, and that life is a God-given gift, and we do not have that right to take it. Personal costs of participating in assisting a death was too high for one nurse. Fears about being judged for not supporting, feeling pressured to partake. Objectors are in the minority. Fear of being charged with abandonment. Fear of losing license due to the contraindication between the nurse's rights, Charter of Rights and Freedom, and the duty to provide care. I don't think I'd be able to live with myself if I was forced to participate. It would wreck me, one nurse said. The lack of confidence and education were there to not change their mind. Then there were a few general statements that I couldn't really put in either adopters or objectors. Complexity of emotions for those who were against MAID and those who were not. Death is culturally and socially a taboo subject, even to this day. This just adds to the difficulty in dealing with dying and death. Most saw their role advocating for their patient's right to choose rather than supporting the act of MAID itself. Some nurses are in flux between the level of participating, so fully, partially, or not at all. Resistant from other nurses, the risk of bullying to the ones that support MAID and to the ones that don't. One stated that no nurse in the beginning would make it known to others that they would support MAID. Nurses were personally impacted as they tried to make sense where they personally stood to the underlying values and practices. Existential questioning, personal soul searching. I don't think it's a better option. I think it's another option. Many felt that offering a range of options was more humane. Extensive nursing experience of the participants may be a significant factor of shaping their perceptions of MAID. So you can see there's quite a lot of feelings, positive, negative, yes, I'll do it, no, I won't do it, and for their reasons. And this still is challenging to this day of trying to get nurses to go out and support MAID in the community, in the hospital, because of these reasons.
Some of the articles you researched were ones before the new legislation changes in 2021. Were you able to determine any differences in nursing perspectives between the old and new legislations?
So I had significant difficulty attempting to locate more recent articles, especially ones after the new Canadian legislative changes in March of 2021. This actually speaks volumes to myself that there needs to be more research and support to nurses with these new changes. I had one nurse tell me she attended her first MAID death, where death was not reasonably foreseeable on an elderly blind man whose blindness was not curable. He felt he had no quality of life, and being able to see was everything to him. He was not dying of any terminal illness, but had a condition which was grievous to him. He was approved according to the law. She said it was just as peaceful and beautiful of an experience as other maids, but it did take her some time to come to terms with this particular event under the new law. I could only imagine how some nurses feel about this new track in Canada of accessing MAID without being terminally ill. I ask if this, in fact, would sway some nurses not to participate in this track of MAID deaths, but would still those who are terminally ill. More questions than answers, at least for me.
Can you list some of the challenges nurses may face with the MAID legislation and in the workplace?
For sure. Seems to be such a disparity between nurses' workplaces and geographical locations on the degree of practice supports. So some had extreme lack of clinical guidelines and practice supports, while other areas had highly structured MAID teams and guidelines and supports and everything they could possibly want. Leadership thoughts of philosophy in some of these areas guided the policy and procedure work within the employer. So even though the government gave the guidelines for the law, it was still up to the provinces and territories and each institution to come up with their own policy and procedures. Some of these decisions did not allow MAID to be done in certain organizations. Some hospices within Canada did not allow end-of-life patients to access MAID within their facility and must be discharged to have the procedure at home or in hospital. However, in the last year or so, many hospices have changed their stance on this decision due to pressures from the public. One hospice in British Columbia refused to change their decision and ultimately lost their funding and had to close. Many hospices, especially in Ontario, do not admit persons strictly to have MAID completed. But if the person admitted then decides to pursue those options, then they don't have to leave anymore. A common theme in most of the articles I researched was the lack of support from employers. Many nurses would not ask for help or support in fear of being thought of as weak, difficult, and not doing their job by management, which many have never been a part of or witnessed a maid. This in turn also leads to many feelings of nurses had regarding maid participation or not.
And Julie, do you personally know any nurses who have supported the maid process?
Yes, in fact, I know a few home care nurses. I have only extensively spoken with a couple of these nurses in regards to the roles and feelings about maid. One has supported just over 20 people in their quest for a peaceful ending, and the other over 40. These were since maid became legal in Canada and home care agencies started to partake in this role for their nurses. Not all home care agencies allow their nurses to witness or perform any nursing interventions related to maid. If one of their clients wants maid, then another company takes this on or the patient goes to the hospital. One nurse explained she did not have any significant concerns about the maid process or the procedure itself. If the patient wanted this, then she was there to support them. The first few of them she describes were incredibly sad, as in any death, but more so if they were the primary nurse for quite some time. With other clients, the nurse really doesn't develop that therapeutic relationship. You see them the day before and then the day of. It's not as personal, she stated. After a while, she states she was not as emotional as with the first few deaths. She spoke of a variety of feelings that happened during this whole process. There is relief when the patient is no longer suffering and they got their wish of a maid death. On the other side, there can be issues with the family if they're not completely on board with their loved one's decision. She attended a maid death of a 44-year-old, her youngest maid patient so far. She explained this one was more emotional, more for the family and seeing their sadness and grief. The patient was more than ready and said, "Hell yes, let's do this," when the doctor asked for final consent. Here was this young woman who was not kind to her body over the years, wanting to die as she was in so much pain, but there she was on her deathbed trying to comfort her family. In the end, the family was okay, I guess as much as they could be, after the death, but it was so emotional right before and during the medication administration. You never know how the family will react at each stage, she says. This particular nurse, after 40 maid-related deaths, finally admitted she was tired, emotionally burned out from repeated deaths, plus then all her other patients who died naturally. She took 9 months off from supporting maids. She hopes to be able to support them again, but is not quite sure when and how often she'll actually do this. She also explained that her home care agency really did not support the nurses who attended maid procedures. In the beginning, she said the nurse was not to take on any other patients that day, and the manager would call right after to check on the nurse. This did not always occur, and after a while with different managers, this support became non-existent. She would have several other patients to see after the maid death. Even if the nurse did not see any further patients that day, there was still the issue of lack of pay. Losing money did not make volunteering to support a maid death reasonable. There was no additional compensation for this type of nursing visit, just hours of pay that you were at the home plus your mileage. But with continued nursing shortages, the ability not to take on other patients those days is now long gone. The other nurse I spoke with had similar experiences and feelings, but continues to support maid deaths after 20 something. She stopped counting after 20. Her feeling is that if she does not support the doctor that day, the patient may not get their request for a maid death. She feels it is her obligation to do this as she has no conscientious objections. She relishes in the fact that this type of death does not bother her like her first few deaths. Most of her clients are elderly and ready to die. She has not had anyone under the age of 50 years yet. She stated she does not know how she would feel with a younger patient having maid. She was realistic in that she wouldn't know until she had one. Her family knew that she supported maid deaths, Even the nurse's own mother did not know what MABE was, but when she explained it to her, her mother said, "I want that when my time is coming." Just proves a lot of people still don't know what MABE is. And the fact, yeah, we can do this in Canada. And that is even an option for death when they're not terminally ill. She said it does spark a bit of a debate within her household, but understand some will have reservations about it. She knew of some nurses who had reservations and concerns about this type of death, but when they saw one, quickly changed their minds. Seeing what was involved and how peaceful it was the turning point for her. This nurse also said she felt, if we as humans can euthanize our pets, why couldn't we do that to the people who were suffering despite medical advances in care? In fact, I personally resonate with this concept. We wouldn't let our pets suffer, so why should people suffer because of laws and other people's opinions? Some nurses I know who used to partake in this kind of death eventually burned out and temporarily stopped going to these procedures. Unfortunately, there are not very many home care nurses in our area that will witness or assist in a MABE death. My fear is that a patient may not receive their wish to die by MABE if there are not enough willing nurses. I've heard of date postponements due to staffing and the fact that many doctors do not start IVs. So that can be an issue too.
Have you personally witnessed a MABE death in your extensive career?
In early 2018, I was able to witness a MABE procedure. Boy, that was an eye-opener professionally and personally. The home care nurse and I arrived at the woman's home around 8 a.m. on a beautiful sunny spring day. The other nurse went to the home the day before to meet the client and her husband and check the supply and medication boxes that had been delivered. The nurse had received permission for myself to attend her procedure, and she was graciously accepting of my presence. Briefly, this woman had gastric cancer that spread to her bones, and she was having multiple painful pathological fractures with minimal force. We sat with the client, her husband, and drank coffee together. The home care nurse then started her two IVs. She settled in bed with her husband laying next to her. The doctor arrived shortly after. He spoke with the client for a few minutes, then went out to the dining room and drew up all the medications. I was familiar with the meds used due to work in my ICU, but these drugs were in lethal doses. He put the multiple syringes on a tray and covered it with a nice cloth. We walked back into the room and he received final verbal consent. The patient and her husband kissed, told each other they loved each other, and then she said, "Let's go, I'm ready." The doctor injected the midazolam to put her to sleep. An amusing moment then occurred as he was injecting the medication. The client stated to her husband, "Don't forget to put the garbage out on Friday." A true wife right to the end. We all had a little chuckle, then she was asleep. Then the remainder of the protocol of medications followed suit. Within 5 minutes, she was dead. It was the most peaceful death I had ever witnessed. I've seen everything from trauma-related deaths at the scene of the accident to the unresponsive end-of-life patient who did not experience terminal secretions. However, this death, as sudden as it was very different, but so tranquil. The home care nurse and I both shed a tear as she was pronounced, but the doctor was stoic. It was such an honor to be present for her last moments and ultimately her death. Her husband cried, but was grateful that her suffering had ended. In fact, this is his second wife who had died from cancer, and this death was much more peaceful than his first wife's. The nurse and I tidied up the supplies and said goodbye to the husband and doctor. On the way home, I cried like I never cried over a patient before. I think in hindsight, it was sad and happy tears I was shedding. To know how she suffered, but the fact that she got to have the kind of death she wanted was gratifying to me as an outsider. I feel after witnessing a MABE death, it made it more clear to me this was definitely an option for end-of-life care that I had no reservations about. In fact, I have been witness to a couple of other May deaths at a local hospice I used to work at. Each one ended so peacefully with sincere gratitude and thanks from the client and family.
Oh, thank you for that, Julie. That actually brought a tear to my eye and lump in my throat. That was a wonderful explanation of your journey with MAID. Can you comment on MAID, nursing, and risk of burnout?
For sure. I've briefly touched on it, but let's delve into it a little bit more. I think if a healthcare worker, particularly nurses and PSWs, but even some doctors, who are witness to several deaths naturally or via MAID, this will take a toll on their mental and emotional health. I remember several times in my own career having two or more patients die in a shift with no time to reflect on those deaths or even being able to take a few minutes to mourn. When I worked at hospice and there is a death, MAID or otherwise, there are still 9 other patients to care for. The nurse must put on a happy, brave face after the patient death, so not to scare or deter from the therapeutic relations with the other patients who are dying themselves. Some nurses, myself included, usually wait until compassion fatigue or burnout has crept into our lives before realizing we need a break. Sometimes self-care practices are not enough. Taking a bubble bath or going for a walk may help in that moment, but not the entire issues that's causing the burnout and fatigue. Counseling is a very important aspect of self-care, but as so is support from the employer. I can certainly understand why after 40 plus MAID-related deaths, my nurse friend stepped back from supporting MAIDs until her mental and physical health improved.
What does the College of Nurses of Ontario, the Registered Nurses Association of Ontario, and the Canadian Nurses Association state about nurses and MAID?
So each one of them basically just talks about policy, guidelines, the clinical, technical aspects of it. So nothing really in the fact that they're talking about nurses' feelings and the need for self-care and all that kind of stuff. So I'll break it down from each one and just give a brief overview. So the College of Nurses of Ontario has a 21-page document that was developed in April 2021, a little too late, frankly. It was 3 years after when MAIDs first started, on the guidance on nurses' roles in MAID. In summary, this document explains the legislative changes, nursing accountabilities, conscientious objections, which I'll talk about in a minute, the nurse practitioner's role, and the stages in obtaining MAID. A few key points that are important to nurses, both RNs and RPNs in Ontario, include supporting the NP or MD by providing nursing care, educating patients, providing support and comfort to patients and families, acting as an independent witness, and the insertion of IV lines that are used to administer the medications. It is very important to note that nurses may not encourage or pressure the patient to make their decision on receiving MAID. The role of the nurse practitioner in Ontario includes the provision of assistance by administering the medications to the patient that causes their death, or the prescribing of the medication for self-administration. Furthermore, NPs who do not wish to participate in MAID process by either providing assessments or the administration of medications must refer the patient onto another NP or MD who does do this. So conscientious objection, and it is talked about in all three professional associations. But according to the CNO document for nurses, it recognizes that a nurse may have a freedom of conscience in which their values and beliefs may differ from the patient, therefore may not be comfortable in participating in the MAID process. If the nurse chooses to conscientiously object, this cannot be directly conveyed to the patient, and no moral judgments about the beliefs, lifestyle, identity, or characteristics of the patient should be expressed. The nurse must transfer the care of the patient to another nurse or healthcare professional who can provide nursing care to this patient. However, the regulations from the CNO state the nurse must continue to provide nursing care to the patient until an appropriate replacement is found, but not including the activities involved in the MAID. The RNAO, the Registered Nurses Association of Ontario, provides nurses with a two-part webinar on MAID. The webinar states that RNs can aid a person to self-administer a substance that has been prescribed for the purposes of MAID, so long as the person makes an explicit request for that assistance, but the nurse cannot administer the medication. RNs and NPs can provide information to patients on the lawful provision of MAID, and in doing so will not render them culpable for counseling or aiding a suicide, as long as the information is on lawful MAID processes and requirements. It reiterates the notion that nurses cannot encourage the procedure. The Canadian Nurses Association website provides several articles on MAID, including a statement made in 2016 on the passing of Bill C-14. In summary, it states it welcomes the passage of law that allows eligible persons to access MAID while protecting healthcare providers. CNA has been working with national and provincial stakeholders to develop nursing frameworks while also advocating for palliative and end-of-life care. So you can see it's all policy, procedure, position statements, but I haven't, besides the couple of articles I was able to find, really find where nurses can go for help to either discover would they or would they not support a MAID-related death? And if they are, where do they go for help? This is where employers kind of come into play. And we'll talk about that in a moment.
Are there any new changes to the MAID legislation in the upcoming years?
Yes. In fact, next March 17th of 2023, new legislation is to be passed in regards to assessing MAID when mental illness is the sole reason for requesting MAID. Currently, these individuals are not eligible for MAID in Canada. Next March, if mental illness is the sole medical condition, may be eligible for MAID if they meet all the legal criteria. Also, at this time, someone with mental illness may be eligible for MAID if they also have a grievous and irremediable physical condition. So they could have a history of schizophrenia or clinical depression in which they're seeking treatment under psychiatric care, but this would apply if they had terminal cancer. It's not the sole reason why they're asking for MAID. Currently, there's no information from the government about potential or actual safeguards in relation to the soon new to be legislation. So not sure if the information will be released on March 17th, which is also the date that they can access MAID, or are they going to release some of it a bit sooner? I'm not sure. And I have not seen any information or surveys come through regarding healthcare professionals' opinions on this new legislation. I remember before last year's legislation was passed, there was a quite in-depth survey that I took, and then the changes came. So kind of what people wanted to see in regards to MAID. And I was very blunt and descriptive as a, you know, someone who has witnessed some MAIDs, as well as, you know, people more from a nursing perspective, more than a personal perspective, but it was open to all healthcare workers and the general public. And a lot of those changes were made. So changing the mental health piece of it, I have not seen anything in the same.
With the new proposed changes next year, can you predict any further or different feelings of nurses in the provision of MAID?
I know a couple of MAID provider doctors who have expressed concern and uncertainty already with the proposed changes. One stated he will have to wait and see what the actual safeguards are that the government puts in place, but has already stated he plans to make sure the person requesting MAID has psychiatric clearance first. I have spoken to a couple of nurses who have or continue to participate in MAID, and they already feel an uneasiness about those with mental health disorders being the only diagnostic criteria. True feelings won't be revealed until the new guidelines and law passes next March. This proposed change is clearly going to spark some intense conversations amongst the public and those who work in healthcare. Some feel it is definitely needed, so those suffering from mental illness who are contemplating suicide do not have to do it alone or by inhumane means like hanging or using a weapon. At this moment, I'm kind of on the fence. I agree this would be more humane than taking one's own life by other horrific methods, but I want to make sure there's appropriate safeguards in place to protect this very likely vulnerable population, just as if they were to change the law as in for mature minors and advanced requests.
What do you feel can and should be done to better support nurses who participate in MAID procedures?
So from my readings and when speaking to other nurses who have participated in MAID, there is a lot of work that could be done to improve clinical and personal support for these nurses. First of all agencies who allow nurses to participate should have organizational and employee policies in place, including orientation, prevention of burnout, and information about the whole process. Then that way the nurse can make an informed decision about their practice. In Canada, there are already workshops, educational modules, and support tools already in place, but the education is not currently mandatory, and nor have I seen this education advertised in many institutions that I visit. In the original article for this podcast, which is American-based, they did state some things that could be beneficial to nurses. They state managers should be more aware that the MAID can cause a disparity amongst their staff in who feels comfortable in caring for a patient who is contemplating MAID or those having the procedure done. Staffing may need to be adjusted to allow those nurses who wish to conscientiously object to do so. Policies are also needed to allow the flexibility to allow the diversity of personal and professional values. Nursing education on the legalities of MAID and how to care for the patient and family is needed. Personally, I feel there needs to be reassurance that bullying of nurses related to this topic will not be tolerated. This was a common concern amongst nurses who agree or do not agree with MAID. There also needs to be ongoing counseling available to nurses who support MAID deaths, no matter how many they attend. Professionally, I encourage the retirement and long-term care homes I support to call if they have a MAID death of one of their residents and would feel a debrief would be beneficial to their staff. Also, as a palliative care educator, I do offer MAID information sessions for healthcare workers. This allows staff to mentally prepare for a MAID-related death before it happens, and then we can discuss their feelings and procedural aspects after the death. I like to say knowledge is power, and without knowledge, we cannot deliver the best palliative care experience to the people we serve, the patients and their families. The ultimate goal, no matter how one wants to die, is to have a good death. Thanks for listening. Hope this was informational for everyone.
Well, Julie, I think you did such a fantastic job. That was certainly very informative on MAID, the legality of MAID, ethics of MAID, nursing perspective. So obviously we see why you would be a content expert for MAID. So I thank you for joining us today and for this wonderful conversation.
Thanks.